Radio Kate here in Qatar at the World Conference of Science Journalists. Just been to a very interesting session called Secret Science, and I've grabbed two of the panel members. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Margaret Monroe. I work for Post Media News in Canada.
I'm Rich Stone. I'm the Asia editor for Science in Beijing.
Do you want to just sum up what Secret Science was all about?
It's about the challenges science journalists face in getting scientists to speak with them. We often hear that they're not authorized to speak with the press, the challenges in getting information, and in some cases, the active suppression of scientists by governments. So how to do your stories, how to get the information.
And how big a problem is that for science journalists? And does that change around the world?
Well, it seems to be a growing problem. It's been a long-standing problem in China. China is a top-down government that can basically muzzle its scientists without any pushback from the general public. But as we heard in the session, it's a problem in Canada, which Margaret can talk about, in the United States. A lot of countries, scientists are just coming under pressure to follow approved lines, to censor their own remarks, or in some cases just completely forbidden from talking to journalists.
And is there any way around it in China, or do you have to just take what you're given and that's all you can do?
Well, there are ways you can circumvent the system and get the information you need to do the story. I don't see an easy solution to changing the system in China. We're not going to spark a new way of thinking. Alan Leshner, AAAS CEO, this morning talked about the free press is a driver of scientific progress. And in China, it's a country that's committed to science. I mean, science is their religion, but they do not buy the argument that a free press is going to improve their scientific development, unfortunately.
So I was interested in the session. We heard stories from China. We heard some very powerful stuff from Russia. And then you were telling us about Canada. Not something that I had expected necessarily from this session.
No, not at all. And it wasn't something we expected in Canada either. But we basically have got a system in Canada where it used to be very open, trusting system, where the journalists and the scientists were pretty much free to interact within, you know, in terms of talking about their science. And now we have a system that in the last few years has just converted over to a very controlled, tight system. Everything coordinated through Ottawa if you want to talk to a government scientist in Canada, or for the most part. And it's been quite a radical change. But, you know, the session was really interesting because you could see there's different permutations of the same sort of thing going on around the world. Though the situation in Russia was just, you know, I felt really quite humbled to even be on the panel. I just thought we could have had a whole session just on what was going on in Russia. But this system with, you know, controlled lines, approving, framing stories, I think it's partly growing out of this rise of the media strategists, media framers, and it's a problem that is not going to go away. I think this is they're well-funded. The government has realized the value of being able to frame stories, and they can go directly. The people, I've heard government spokesmen in top, you know, PR people in Ottawa, they say they don't need the media filter anymore. They'd rather go around the media filter. They'll go directly to the public with their stories, which is, you know, they post things on websites and stuff. And I think you sort of get the same thing in the States and probably in Europe as well. I'm not sure, but
I mean, do they not then risk you going off and finding different scientists that will give you a completely different message? It seems to me they may be just shooting themselves in the foot, at least if they've got their own scientists, they have some idea of the research that's being done.
Exactly. There was a case recently in Canada where the government, Environment Canada, wouldn't let reporters interview scientists who were doing this. It was quite an interesting climate scenario study on how different warming scenarios in the next 100 years. So the Environment Canada scientists, who actually, you know, these are world-leading climate modelers. These are climate models that are going to be fed into the next IPCC assessment. And so they weren't allowed to give the interviews. So, of course, you phone up the critic that says, oh, the government, you know, why are they suppressing this information? And so it does blow up in their face. And that's what I find that they're so, they are shooting themselves in the foot, but they're really not very professional about what they're doing here. Like, why would you not let a scientist who's got a paper in a big journal talk to reporters? It's, you know, you think you'd want to celebrate that kind of, you know, science. And instead, it's just not happening.
So I'm wondering, you're talking in particular about government scientists.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the scientific community? Have they sort of come out against this, or are they using this opportunity to get more of their stories in the paper?
Well, what's happening in Canada is, instead of, like, reporters have gotten so frustrated about this, what's going on. And it's not just scientists. It's happened with a lot of government bureaucrats as well. But more and more reporters are phoning the university scientists. So if you get a report that's got a co-author at the university, you just phone the university scientists now, and they're not. And it is actually causing some problems. Like, I was in a panel discussing this a few weeks ago in Calgary, and this poor guy at the University of Calgary, he had co-authored a study with some climate modelers, the federal government, but he was the only one who was authorized to speak. And so he got all this huge publicity, and I thought the scientists were aware enough of what was going on with the media that they would appreciate what happened. But in fact, he was saying how his colleagues had sort of resented, because he was the sort of the last author in the paper. And they were like, well, you're taking all the glory. And there was this sort of pushback from within the community. But I think it's partly the scientists, they don't really understand how science media works and how getting stories out. So
they're doing science, not politics.
Yes. So what's happened is, I think it's going to take a while. And I think we need to really sit down with the scientists a bit and sort of, the lights are sort of slowly going on, but it's not, you know, it's not a huge issue in Canada, right? It's every once in a while you'll get these really bad examples that'll pop up, but it's not really front of most people's minds, right? But I think it is a growing concern among the scientific community, and I think we could sort of maybe work with them to try and highlight the problem a bit more.
And how does that compare with the situation in China? Are the scientists themselves standing up and reaching out to journalists at all, or are they just, you know, there's just a fine line and they won't cross it?
No, I think Chinese scientists are anxious to publicize their work, and there are a lot of scientists who will reach out to journalists. There is a lot of stories that the Chinese government wants to get out, new research findings. They want to control the message, though. I mean, it's human nature to try to control the message. If I'm a target of an article, I will try my best to put my best face forward. I think that the chilling thing is that this attitude of trying to control the message is applying to, you know, stories that could positively change policy. There is.
Could you give us a quick recap of the story you told about the mushrooms?
Oh yeah, I would love to talk about the mushrooms. I heard from a Chinese CDC researcher that scientists had discovered the cause of an unusual disease, Yunnan sudden death syndrome, which, you know, people of all ages would suddenly die. You know, their heart would appear to stop. It was a mystery what caused this. For 30 years, a scientist discovered the cause. And the scientists in Beijing who I interviewed were happy to talk about the story. But then in Yunnan, far from Beijing, the provincial health authorities would not want to talk to a foreign correspondent at all. They rejected, even after the health minister himself ordered the Yunnan provincial authorities to cooperate, they still refused. So it's amazing. This is a story. This is a public health issue.
Did they give you any reason?
They did not give a reason. The cause turned out to be a unique kind of mushroom that was new to science. And you need to get that information out to the public in Yunnan. And while Science Magazine was not sold on newsstands in the area, it's still a way to disseminate information about what's pretty stunning discovery that benefits society, benefits Chinese society, and yet they were still suppressing it in Yunnan. They didn't want to cooperate. So I pull out my hair, what little is left, to try to make progress on this issue. I think the only solution for journalists is to do whatever you can to explore alternative avenues for getting information. In Yunnan, it meant working around the provincial health department, working directly with university researchers in Yunnan province. That's what you have to do. You have to get the story and then get it out to the public. And hopefully, someday, there will be a shift of the pendulum back to trying to promote a free press. And we just have to work through a very difficult time right now.
I concur.
Me too. All right, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.